So we start walking almost 9 days ago. We start walk from Ramapo, Ramape, Sweet Rock, Ramapo Nation's camp. And you know all these people, Standing Rock situation. So Ramapo chief Perry has been Standing Rock. And he feel the same story around New Jersey pipeline around here is the all same story from Standing Rock. So he want to do solidarity campsite, the Ramapo Ramape Nation camp. They call Sweet Rock camp. So we start walk almost 9 days ago, and we have been walking very hot and cold and rain and many different day. Today is very, very hot. So I'm very happy to stand in front of beautiful water, because we are walking for water. Water is life. So I appreciate Bill-san and Linda-san open your house. Thank you. So today's speakers, Phil-san. Phil is not walking only this time. Phil was walking many different peace march too. So he has lots of experience about peace work. He's a minister of Unitarian Universal Minister. Hi, dozo. I hold you.
All right, same kind of. No song. Yes.
So I think I finally cracked the code. I was wondering how you get the honor of speaking when we have nightly gatherings, and I got it, because today when we came to Kopsaki, right? I remember there was somebody really lagging behind, dead last today. I came in dead last, so thank you very much for the honor of addressing you. As June said,
can you hear everybody here?
Thank you.
I can hear very well, so please stay in.
Yeah, this is a good sign. I can appreciate that. A far distant second to June-san, I probably have more miles walked than in our community. For 30 years, I've walked many, many miles for disarmament, for ecology, environmental causes, social justice causes. And I thought I would tell you three reasons why I do that. The practical, I'll call it psychological, and the spiritual, social. I have to start with a practical level. And it's been drilled in. I'm not a linear thinker, but it's been so drilled into me, you know, like, why are you doing what you're doing? Is it worth it? I got that plaguing question all the time, right? That kind of a thing. And on the many walks, I have seen that peace walks, environmental walks, are very effective. They're very powerful on many levels. And I'll just draw one example is, it's tonight in many different ways, but something that I've noticed over the years in different walks is when we go through, if they had a small group when we left, sometimes they'd have a larger group. Or I just say that groups would get energized. If you're an organizer, if you've been doing, how many will identify as doing some organizing of some event, any kind of community event, family event, right? Great. It takes a lot of work, right? And most of it, you might even have a lot of companionship, but a lot of it done in isolation. just work. And it's been my impression that organizers, local organizers, seem to really appreciate the boost of energy coming through. So that level is worth it. But also on the level of press and radio and grabbing attention, getting issues visible. So it's very practical level. And I had, if you asked me, I could give more specific examples, very specific examples too, where in the doubting mind of questioning, are we doing any good? And I'd come back to an area and at another action, and I'd meet somebody and they'd say, where are you from? And they'd say their group, and it was a group that didn't exist before we got there that got formed. That's happened to me. It's like that kind of a thing. That's a practical, on the issue of the water, just how to wake up, right? How do we get this out there? And so there's that level on the practical. Really, the three reasons are, they're not separate. They overlap. So when I said psychological, I was thinking actually like that the walks are in the language of dreams. There was an organizer named Annie Stegmaier I walked several times in the 80s, there were several walks in the 80s. I walked one of them in Europe for ecology and disarmament. And she said that. That was her. She said that that walks, you organize them because they speak in the language of dreams. And that at least got one. it's so easy in our world to get to, there's like so much attention all the time, grabbing attention, it's easy to get dismissed. But there's something about the walk, imagine too, some beautiful bucolic setting or some beauty, and then or urban or whatever, and then where there's nobody there, and all of a sudden here comes this line of people, diversity often, right? And they're with the gundaiki and the drums, it's like, whoa, this is a dream, right? So I think it speaks on that level. And a little more, I'll speak in the negative example of that in terms of the difficulty of communication and what reaches. Where's Harold? Harold's not here. Oh, there you go. Hey, Harold. Yeah, I told you in a single, yeah. But we were walking to them. Most of the response, my impression on this walk, the water for life, has been very positive. It's my unscientific study from the, compared to previous walks, like the number of thumbs up and honks and yays is far outnumbered than the others. But today there was a few people, and there was one who, racing by, flipped us the bird, and Harold turned around right behind me, and his beautiful, I touched my heart, and I said, why did they do that? we've gotten so disconnected. And so again, that's a negative example, if you will, too, because it's more here, look at this. Why do I walk? I walk because before tonight I didn't know any of you, and here I am in your homes with a being presented a feast. And it's there's magic in these walks that speak. So I think that's something to do with the language of dreams. And like I said, they're not really separate reasons. But the third one is spiritual social. And by this, I mean that, I've got a couple examples of this. The first, I was walking last year I've walked a number of times with Jun-san. And there's events around the Hiroshima Day. If nobody else has said it, if you can make it August 5th to Grafton, you won't want to miss it. It's a beautiful ceremony, if not come another time. But she usually has a walk around that, culminating in that. So I'm glad I've been very short. And I was walking last year when I had just gone to see my mom, who's in Glens Falls. And got the call that she was in the hospital. And somebody, Andrea. Yeah, you drove me, right? Yeah, Jun-san said, will you take Phil? And they took me up to, I'm getting touched again. They took me, and I got there in time for the, to have the priest deliver last rites. And she was gone the next morning. And so it's a blessing to be back on this particular walk, because she actually died on August 5th, so on the anniversary. And Jun-san, everyone, but especially Jun-san, the honor that I experienced in being held in community at the time of the loss of my mom, it's quite beautiful. So it's wonderful to be back for that level. But on a more everyday level, of the spiritual social. And I say that spiritual social mean, I don't know what you think of spiritual, but one of the ways I'm speaking of is like being part of something larger, being in relationship to something larger, and to become aware of our interconnectedness, that we're not separate individuals. Like, how could he do that? And it's like, well, I don't think there was much of a connection there. I don't know, you know.
He had
it's
a
like,
Confederate flag too.
I want to make a connection with that guy, not having a Confederate flag, but last example, there's so many, but there's something about the nature of the walks, about trying to do something about something that's so important to you. Like, you know, there's insanity. Well, we can't do anything, powerless, and we come together to do something about it. And the connection that is made from that, but there's something about it that then ripples out in so many directions in terms of inviting us to, I'm going to say remember, I started to say act, but remember how we're meant to live together, how we're meant to be in connection. And my last example was just, it's not so big or dramatic, but it's just was, I was sitting at the Trinity Church in, most people remember, but
Socrates.
One day ago, seemed like two days, but in the course after the day of the walk, in the course of less than an hour, getting ready for our meal, and as we sat down to eat, I gave and received more smiles. And I saw the smiles going around, not only to me, that was, I mean, that, I like that, I think when they come my direction more and everything, but what even touched me even more was to see how they went all the way around. And you see people being held as if, you know, in a way that the sacredness is there, that we matter. So, practical, your language of dreams, spiritual, social. And someone else, I don't know, maybe we'll speak to the very practical, important reasons of this particular cause. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Jun-san. And I wasn't really expecting to be speaking, but to your point, the beautiful thing that happened from that was I put up these signs along the route that I thought was gonna be the route. So signs that say, you know, water is sacred, and water walk for life, peace and love and all this stuff. And so I'm not taking them down. So those are now, people are gonna see those, you know, and hopefully they've heard about the event, the walk, and of all of you passing through, and they will connect those signs in some way, and think about water, and think about this issue of the Pilgrim Pipelines, which is something I've been working on for about 3 years. When I first heard about it.
So this pipeline starts in the Port of Albany, but that is the midpoint of a virtual pipeline that starts by rail, leading all the way to North Dakota, and that you know, essentially, you cannot have this pipeline without crude by rail. At this point, the proposal is to bring oil, fracked oil from North Dakota through Canada, down the Canadian Pacific line, along Lake Champlain and that very fragile railroad infrastructure there, right along, you know, that very fragile lake, you know, through the the eastern part of the Adirondacks, through Saratoga, crossing several water supplies for the Capital District into Albany. So the narrative that the company has been giving is that we desperately need this pipeline because shipping oil by train and shipping oil by barge is inherently unsafe. We need to protect the Hudson River let us build these twin pipelines. But what they don't acknowledge is that you can only fill this pipeline with a bomb train, and that we are going to be endangering every water supply between North Dakota and Albany to do that. And it also ignores the fact that, in fact, pipelines are no safer than barges or trains. The risks to each transportation mode are different. But when a pipeline ruptures, as happened on the Kalamazoo River in Michigan, sometimes you don't realize that it's ruptured, sometimes for days. In that case, it dumped, I think over a million or close to a million gallons of dilbit into the river. The cost right now is escalating towards $2 billion, and they still can't clean up that river. Anywhere along the point, you know, if we do have a spill along the thruway, it could seep into any number of our creeks. Here in New Baltimore, it would pass along the thruway mostly, but it's, you know, how is it going to pass? It would have to drill under the Hanacroy Creek. All of us enjoy that creek. That, you know, a rupture, some sort of accident along the thruway, we don't know, could start a spill that could not only contaminate the Hudson River, but also, you know, kill any number of these tributaries that we enjoy. So it is 200,000 barrels a day of crude oil, which is about two full bomb trains, full, you know, strings of 120 car bomb trains coming into Albany, and then coming back from Linden, New Jersey, another 200,000 barrels of refined products. So that could be diesel, it could be gasoline, it could be other things. And as you said, there are several laterals under the Hudson, one that connects the Port of Albany with Rensselaer, but then also a lateral that goes into Newburgh, where there is a somewhat defunct global facility. There, they have been looking for several years to also establish a barge traffic area. And I don't think that this pipeline, as they advertise, will take barges off the river. I think with the lifting of the crude export ban for, I think, close to 40 years, you know, we were not allowed to export crude out of the United States as part of a domestic energy independence, you know, policy. Now that we can flood the global market with our crude, there will be no limitation to how much, once the price goes up, how much they want to push. So if the pipeline is full, then they will fill barges. I think it's not a question of one or the other. It's all of the above. So I think the last thing I'll say, if you don't mind me prattling on, is that one unique thing to an oil pipeline in New York is that we actually have some control over it. Gas pipelines of a very large size are subject to FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Smaller ones are subject to review by the Public Service Commission. Other things like power plants, Public Service Commission has control over. Other transmission lines, sometimes the PSC or the DEC, the Department of Environmental Conservation, have authority over. No one conceived of oil pipelines in New York, or at least not since the 19th century. So we don't really have a permitting authority. This is kind of a lawless territory. But there is a 1909 law that was written, I think, in response to some of the oil in the southern tier in Allegheny County and Steuben County. That says that if a pipeline, an oil pipeline, or it says any pipeline, since then the law has been preempted for gas and other things, but the law still exists for oil pipelines. If it passes through a village or a city, it needs to get approval by 2/3 majority of that governing body. And so along that route from Albany to Linden, New Jersey, or at least Albany to the New York border, we have many communities, cities and villages, that have already written resolutions saying we would not approve of this pipeline. There's no need to go through an extensive, cumbersome public process for something we will not allow. So I think it is important for us to stand with our municipalities. New Baltimore, I believe, has written some resolutions or approved some resolutions, at least in the past, asking for, you know, lead agency status for the DEC. But I think that this is something we have to cling to, and we have to make sure that on the federal level, they don't take this away from us. And then at the state level, we can find there's a law or there's a bill out there we are trying to get passed next year, maybe the year we can get it passed, that towns would be inserted into that 1909 law so that New Baltimore itself would then have veto power. But this is something we should be aware of, and it's something that we can organize around. So it's important. But I want to thank you for walking this, because you are also a virtual pipeline. You're a pipeline of people, and you are showing what you know we have as an alternative, and spreading good the good word as we go along. And I think that pipelines can divide, but pipelines can unite as well. And I thank you for uniting us all. But I think that, you know, the other issue is that it is not just a pipeline, but there need to be hundreds of access roads permanently created to service this line. I mean, it is going down the thruway. It will jump off in certain points. As you can imagine, in between Coxsackie and Catskill, the thruway is sitting on a precipice. It is the old Maquis Path. This is the old Mohican Trail that overlooks the whole valley, and in some ways the thruway sort of desecrated that historic trail, but this would also plow through it. They can't actually, it would be too expensive for them to blast through the rock. So based on landowner conversations, they want to go along the flats. And I know Bob and I and many people have worked very hard to preserve those areas for Northern Harrier, for Short-Eared Owl. That these are important agricultural areas. There's a lot of cultural heritage there. And they seem to think that they're talking about taking it through eminent domain. I think it's going to be very complicated for them, but it is not impossible at some point if they can get far enough and perhaps change that 1909 law a little bit. I don't know how they're going to get around that. They could seize all that land through eminent domain and the hundreds of access roads that will inhibit people's ability to use their land, mostly for agriculture and other things, but it is a real affront to all of us. And I, you know, when talking about it in Greene County and other places, we talk about real practical problems, but, you know, I think it's also important to evoke the notion of climate change, and that, you know, this represents, you know, a fuse to a climate bomb that we do not want to set off, that essentially this is some of the dirtiest, most benzene and methane laden oil that they are flaring off. I spent some time in North Dakota looking at that beautiful prairie landscape, and at night it is lit up like some obscene birthday cake. It is flare after flare after flare, and that it is really it makes one heartsick to just see you know how it's changed people culturally, how it's, I mean, we've all sort of watched Standing Rock. Many of you maybe went and participated in this protest, but this is very much connected. It is the same oil. It is the same land. We are part of that same virtual pipeline, whether it is Dakota Access or it is, you know, this pipeline that is going through our community. And then I think we have a moral responsibility to the climate, to the globe, but also to the people of North Dakota that really have been dispossessed by this massive energy boom. I think, you know, we cannot give up pushing against this, standing against this, but there have been successes. I mean, I think that they have lost major funding. You know, I have spoken to the permitting, you know, officials that really have to remain neutral. They have to, you know, under the law, you know, review this project without bias, but they have said, you know, that they've had meetings with, you know, scheduled meetings with project developers that have been canceled, that we essentially were supposed to start a scoping process almost a year ago, and nothing has happened. And I think largely because public protest has been so great, and they've lost investors, and I think that they don't want to move forward without those investors, and I think keeping pressure is important.
When I'm planning to this walk, I walked March from Linden, New Jersey, to Indian Point around March during the Fukushima 5 years anniversary time, and is not finished because pipeline from Linden to Albany. So many of friends said, when you does next work? So I was, many pressure came. So I realized that 2 months ago, Kingston Unitarian Church, they have a coalition meeting, with a pipeline coalition meeting. So my friend from Albany invite to go there so you can share your peace work. So I went there and I met Liz. So if I walking myself, I no ask people to where to stay. It's okay under the bridge, but I invite many of people. I know one of people sleeping under the bridge. I liked everybody more comfortable way under the roof. But summertime, I know too much pressure because if something not happening, we just okay to lay down some grass. You know, winter time more serious cold. So I need under the roof. So I am 50% looking under the roof. 50% is okay if not happening, we just under the bridge. So Liz was offering to find out. So can you share the story?
To me, many people that I know in this room exemplify the hope that I have for our future. When I stand here today and look at this beautiful river, and I've been teaching about the Hudson River for over 15 years now, there's so many successes to share. Having grown up near the river and known what it is, the condition of the river in the time of my childhood, there have been many gains in improving the quality of the water and improving the prospects for this river. And we are, I know, I'm pretty sure everyone here tonight feels the amount of stress and pressure that we are under from, that the environment is under, from a diversity of threats, from climate change, as Roger mentioned, to energy and what we're seeing with the pipelines all over the country and the crude oil transport, to invasive species, to, we could stand here all night and talk about the threats, but the fact that we are here tonight, the fact that you are leading this walk, and the fact that these friends have gathered to me is gives me great hope that we can continue to build on the successes that we've met with restoring the Hudson River and turn the tide. And I think there are many examples of how committed people have been able to do that. And I just am so thankful to be here with all of you tonight and to be working towards a common goal. So, thank you.
Thank you. So, Jason, can you share?
So tomorrow here, it's going to be our probably longest day, maybe 16 miles. Not the initial, what we put out as many of us know already, the route changes almost every day. We do an extension of, well, whoever made the maps didn't make the exact intent of what we wanted to do. So we're going, seeing what route we're going up, the 9W pretty much all the way for 16 miles and ending at 38 Church Road, which is an Episcopal church in Bethlehem. Anyone's welcome to come for an hour, 2 hours, the whole day, or just join up at the end and come to our potluck. We have more speakers, different walkers will be speaking about their experience. So you're all welcome to come. That's one of the best ways to support. Just join us, walk with us, and you'll understand the power of a peace walk.
because this is a water prayer song, traditionally sung by Indigenous women. But I've learned that due to the current state that this planet is in, it has been opened for everyone. So.
Translation of that song is "Water is the Blood of Mother Earth," sung by, written by Haudenosaunee elders, grandmothers. Allie, Megan, and I went to Okinawa for a few months for another water protection issue, and that has to do with something a little different but the same in terms of local efforts and interest protecting their land. Its military occupies the prefecture of Okinawa, which is a small island about 900 miles southwest off the mainland of Japan. And we went to learn their culture, share prayers, and peace walk with the Okinawa, as we learned that they are landfilling a bay to build a 33rd military base on the island. So it's affecting their water, it's affecting their sovereignty of their land, and I just wanted to share that. After 2 months' experience on the island, it greatly impacted me, and I learned that they also are indigenous people to Okinawans. They're not necessarily Japanese.
Ryukyuan,
yes. Ryukyu Kingdom. So, and we learned that we sang the Nibiwabo song for them as well. So, thank you.